what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Okay, hello, everyone, and welcome to the NBL Pocket Podcast. I'm recording this on Thursday, the 7th of November, a little bit later than I normally like to, but nonetheless, here we go. So, hello and welcome. I'll start with my calls to action, is what they say to do on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts if you like it, or even if you didn't. And you can follow the show on Facebook and YouTube, both at the NBL Pocket Podcast. And also, I will say, head over and have a listen to the Brad and Body Basketball Podcast. That's hosted by Brad Rosen, formerly of the Sydney Kings and currently with Fox Sports, and Body Knowledge, who is a blogger and writer. We all know Body. Great podcast, fun listen. Let's jump right into it. Let's start with the NBL headlines from this week. The biggest headline is Glenn Rice Jr. has signed with the New Zealand Breakers to replace the injured Scottie Hobson. Rice Jr. became available from Hapoel Holon in Israel, hope I'm pronouncing that right, after punching teammate Guy Panini in the face and fracturing his face, requiring him to go to hospital. Bit of a fractured, odd sort of past for Rice. Dismissed from Georgia Tech for DUI, arrested in 2016 on robbery charges, 2017 on battery charges, and was shot in the leg in 2015. Now, they all look bad on paper, but maybe they're not as bad as they could be. The way I look at it, he hasn't committed a crime or been arrested in New Zealand yet, so let's play ball. Breakers owner Matt Walsh has called Rice the best player ever to play in this league. Looks like they've gone from the best player in the NBL this season to the best player ever. So that's an upgrade, but we shall see. The City uniforms have been released. I like the New Zealand Breakers, Cairns Taipans, and Sydney Kings in that order. Will Weaver has been fined $500 for his outburst at halftime against Melbourne, in Melbourne. We've all seen that. Also, he said he was asked by a reporter at the end of the game, who sent you a text message at halftime as a sign of support? And he said it was an international player who is Australian, who wants the NBL to do well. Jonah Bolden had put out a text or a tweet saying that he was watching the game, and I have a suspicion that it's him. And I don't know why Will Weaver wouldn't come out and say Jonah Bolden. Maybe because it's not Jonah Bolden. But if it is, you know, a guy who a lot of people are probably is not Australia's favorite basketball son right now, but definitely probably should be. Top 10 prospect Jalen Suggs is considering international pro options. He's a top 10 prospect. He could be meaning the NBL's Next Stars program, or he could mean Europe, which was the actual avenue mentioned by his agent. So I don't think this one's too probable, but it's a fishing line in the water. Andrew Bogut has come out and said there is a problem with the standard of NBL referees, and that problem is due to the fact that there is only two or three full-time referees in a professional league. If true, I don't think many people could argue with that logic. Two-stroke-three full-time referees over a league that covers nine teams from and a distance from Perth, New Zealand. That's a lot of ground to cover for a few people. And then probably the biggest headline, saving to the end, Casey Prather will return for Melbourne United against the New Zealand Breakers first up in this round, which is actually going to be played Thursday night, tonight. I'm doing a new segment to start things off. I'd like to go through the best three things in NBL media that came out this week. And the number one is the title of this article, I'm Taking That Risk. An all-access with RJ Hampton by Dana O'Neill of The Athletic. It's a subscription article, but you can get a free trial. I strongly recommend everyone to read it. There's stuff on Hampton, there's stuff on Walsh, there's stuff on the way the team is run, there's stuff on Dan Shamir, who a very odd piece on Shamir, who, and I haven't actually read the full article yet. I have read it once. I'm hoping to read it again. About how Shamir worked under Pitino, but Pitino doesn't see it that way. Very peculiar, but I won't give it away. Do read it. Fantastic from her. She's American, I believe. And then, of course, Liam Santamaria's Studs and Duds column has come out. It's worth your time. And then, as I said at the top of the program, the Brad and Body Basketball Podcast, which I have a hand in helping them make. They do 99.9% of the work, and I just swan at the end. What I do, I'm not too sure, actually, but they're very kind and good product. Let's go and review the round's games. So what I'm doing this is I'm doing sort of the main points of the game and then any questions I have coming out of the game. So let's start with New Zealand, who defeated Cairns 93-85. Corey Webster had 23 points on 57% shooting and 8 assists. Hampton was 4 of 6 from the outside, and Brandon Ashley, 14 points and 11 rebounds in 19 minutes. The Cairns, on the other hand, had good output from their starters. They always do, seemingly. The one fall down was with Scott Machado, their point guard, 11 points, 2 of 11, 18%, and then only 2 points from the Cairns bench. Most notably off that bench is Nate Jawai and Jared Kenny. Didn't quite have a scoring output for them. The other problem was turnovers. New Zealand had 12, Cairns had 19. Yeah, that's kind of where the game was won. My question coming out from this game is, are the Breakers better without Scotty Hobson? I feel terrible saying that about an injured player who didn't play very much and no one got a strong impression of him, but I just felt he was a guy who really loved to shoot the ball and played almost the identical position to Webster, and I feel like retooling around Webster is a good thing. And hopefully Glenn Rice Jr. is that attacking defensive wing who might complement him a bit better. I would have maybe looked at addressing the front court, but they've gone a different way. They seem to like scoring guards. That seems to be their thing. Let's have a look at the next game of the round, which was Brisbane defeating Perth. Brisbane 87 defeated Perth 78, an upset of the round. Cam Glidden came out of the starting lineup and played only 15 minutes, and Mika Vekona went into the starting lineup and played 12. A real masterstroke by Lamanis, and really looked to sort of steady their ship. Perth's Dario Hunt played 16 minutes only, 6 points, 3 rebounds, 4 personal fouls, was in foul trouble the entire game. Hunt is still feeling out the NBL game and the refs, but also he and Gleason are feeling one another out. Hunt's minutes have gone up and down, sometimes with fouls, sometimes with not fouls. In this particular game, Gleason went with Reese Vague, who played 19 minutes, over Majuk, who only played 6. I think Majuk had like 6 rebounds in that time, as the replacement for Hunt, and I thought that was odd, and I think a number of people on Twitter did as well. Going back to what I was saying about Gleason feeling out Hunt, he kind of had a similar relationship with Tarico White last season, when Tarico hit that bad patch and had that game in Cairns where Gleason was telling him, you know, I need you on this play, and he stepped up big. There's going to come that moment between Hunt and Gleason. Nick Kay, unfortunately for him, had quite a bad game in this one. 4 points, 1 of 7, 3 turnovers. He was out of sorts in every which way, and just, it was just no. There's days when it is his day and a guy's day, and there's days when it isn't, and this was certainly not his day. I'll tell you whose day it was, though, was Jason Kadee. 17 points, 5 of 10 from the outside. I've said these two names a bunch in this podcast already, but Brad and Body on their most recent episode said Kadee is more confident and a better player when he is stepping into the jump shot. And I couldn't agree more. And if you watch the footage, you'll be able to see that. Brisbane's offensive rebounding intensity was incredible, and Braun's defense and the team defense on Bryce Cotton was fabulous, limiting him to 12 field goal attempts, most of them not great, when he averages 15. Doesn't seem like a lot, 3 shots, but you know, if he makes them all, that's 6 points, and 6 points would have almost been the difference in this game. That would have been, you know, 66.7% of the way to winning this game. Didn't happen. My question coming out of this game is Perth's load management strategy / rotation on the first game of a back-to-back correct? My answer is no. If you look at it, Reese Vague seems to get heavy minutes in the first game of a back-to-back and not in the second. They need to kind of work that out. I'd give those minutes to Majuk, but that's just me. But that was the question I had coming out of that game. Next game of the round was South East Melbourne, 98, defeated by Melbourne 110. Sean Long, 31 points on 70% from the field, 12 rebounds. Chris Golding, 24 points. Mitch McCarron, 13, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. This team is back. They looked really good. And that South East Melbourne Phoenix front line, despite a decent game from Benson, looked, none of them could stop Sean Long, that was obvious. But I think more than anything, a really gutsy win from Melbourne to make their push to the top four that much easier. If they'd lost this one, or both the games this round, they would have been in dire trouble. Not dire, but big trouble. My question coming out of this game, I kind of touched on it just before. After Pinot's performance regressed back to the mean, does this front court of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix need help? And the answer is sort of, yeah. Ty Wesley obviously going down has brutalized them. And are Benson and Pinot and others able to step up and fill the void? Teams are starting to figure them out now and really hit the glass and really punish them inside. So Simon Mitchell's got something to think about. Next game of the round, Adelaide 96 defeated by Sydney 98 in overtime. This was a really good game, and arguably the game of the round had one of the team's head coaches been thrown out of the game. That seems to be the deciding factor in what makes a great game. But nonetheless, Daniel Johnson went from zero to hero back to zero again, was pulling this team back from the brink and then missed two critical free throws that he'll never forgive himself for. Anthony Drimmick had a great game, 11 points, 14 rebounds, but again, he went from hero to zero, couldn't hit that rather difficult put-back layup at the end of regulation that would have won it. So those bit of restless nights for those two, but they'll be back at it. Adelaide have the team to beat Sydney, I think. They have rangy bigs in Johnson, Froling, and to a lesser extent, Eric Griffin, and killers in the mid-range. Ramon Moore, but obviously more accurately, Jerome Randall. He had 23 points, 10 of 19 from the two-point range, and he was just pulling up inside the keyway, inside the three-point line from everywhere and knocking it. But let's talk about three-point shooting. Adelaide in this game as a team shot 9 of 24, 37%. That's sort of on par with the league and actually quite a good number of attempts for makes. But let's break it down even further. Johnson and Froling were 5 of 9, 55%. The rest of the team was 4 of 15, 27%. They're not getting any shooting from the backcourt. Is that such a bad thing? Hard to say, but let's keep talking about three-point shooting. Brad Newley was 3 of 8, 37% in this game, but overall on the year so far is up 5% on three-point percentage, and at this rate he'll make 52 three-pointers for the season on 144 attempts. He made 28 all of last year on 91 attempts. He's going to make almost double the amount of shots on nowhere near the double the amount of attempts. Something's going on with Brad Newley. His game has improved. He's taking more three-pointers. He's making more three-pointers. He looks like a whole new player. I pillared him early in the year thinking he was done. He's not. I'm really impressed. I don't know what it is, whether it's something he's done with diet or physical conditioning or just the way he's playing within this team. Remains to be seen. He's also shooting free throws at a better clip, but he's only shot 10 of 12. So I won't read too much into that, but he's onto something. And I also thought, perhaps a little bit of a most improved player conversation in the Dave Barlow ilk from last year. You're not going on his body of work. You're going on last year to this year. Just a thought. My question coming out of this game was, how do the Adelaide 36ers improve from the arc? And can they win games if they keep shooting like this? And the answer is, yes, they can improve from the arc. Find more threes for DJ and Froling and McVay. The other guys, I don't think they're ever going to really shoot at a super high clip. Drimmick's a nice shooter as well, I should say. But if you want to improve your three-point percentage, let DJ and Froling shoot it. There's a lot of big bigs who aren't going to chase them out to the perimeter. Find a way to get them shots. But Joey Wright either knows that already or thinks that's a total load of tit. New Zealand Breakers, 79, defeated by Perth, 84 in New Zealand. This is a big win. I don't think people are quite giving the Wildcats the credit for this. To travel from Perth to New Zealand is pretty incredible. Who they play first up? Brisbane, at Brisbane. So they went from Perth to Brisbane, Brisbane to New Zealand. Yeah, all in a couple of days. That's a really tough trip. Simple fact of this game and the Wildcats season. The Wildcats are 3-0 when Dario Hunt plays 20 minutes. And he played 20 minutes in this game. He didn't play 20 minutes in the loss to Brisbane. He had 21 points on 66% from the field, 11 rebounds, 4 of which were offensive, and I think 1 or 2 of which came in the last minute to win this game. Him and Tarico White really took over. Mitch Norton drew 4 charges in this game and had 6 fouls committed on him, 4 of which were the charges. Anyone criticizing his game is not watching the game closely enough. He's the Prince Charles of the NBA. Sorry, NBA. NBL. He's the Prince Charles of the NBL, waiting for royalty to die so he can take his proper place on the throne. I won't go into that too much more, but you know what I'm talking about. Not that I don't love Damian Martin and the way he's played, but you get my point. Perth killed on the rebounds, 41-30. Offensive rebounds, 15-4. This was a return to form for the Wildcats, even though it's not a huge scoreline that jumps out at you, but 15-4, that's crazy. Perth had forced 12 turnovers in their last two games combined coming into this match against New Zealand. They forced the Breakers into 16 alone in this game. You know, those two games combined and then some. So that's pretty good. My question coming out of this game, and something I want you to have a think about. Now that he's healthy this season, is Tarico White an all-NBL first or second teamer? And my answer is yes. That's one for you to answer at home. Illawarra, 69, defeated by Brisbane, 83. This was played in Canberra. Illawarra struggling. I'm not going to spend too much time on this game. They're struggling on the floor. They're struggling off the floor. All the bad blood is bleeding into everything. Joe Healy said so on the basketball show AU. I think she was speaking through Jason Kadee, who also noticed it. And you don't have to speak to Jason Kadee or Joe Healy to know it. You can see it. It's seeping through your television set or if you're there in person. I don't want to rubbish this team too much. Todd Blanchfield, 32 minutes, only 8 field goal attempts. That's a lot of running around for no field goal attempts for their best player. And I'll keep repeating that. Sam Frohling played 0 minutes and was presumably healthy. He was in uniform. He was on the bench. Something's up there. I don't know what's going on. But that kid should not be playing 0 minutes. He should almost be in consideration for being the starting power forward or center. I want to know why he didn't get any minutes. No one's asking the question. They should be. I'm going to send a tweet and not get an answer. But nonetheless, I'm going to send it. Help myself sleep at night. Why is the conversation only on getting an import to replace Aaron Brooks? They've always had a third import spot. My thought is bring someone in to replace Brooks. Maybe a big, maybe a small. It doesn't matter. You can get any import you want and plug them into this team at any spot. There's that many needs. But maybe with that third import spot, bring in a pass-first point guard who's going to help get everyone involved. Not necessarily because it's going to win you games, but in the interest of the younger players on the roster that they surely want to maintain, and also for the mental health of the fans in the organization. Let everybody get the ball through people's hands. I did a sort of calculation about how many passes this team actually makes, and I counted in the first quarter, and it actually wasn't too definitive that they weren't passing the ball a lot, but that number didn't show what was really going on. There was a lot of one and two pass possessions and just jacking up a shot. This team needs to do more. My question coming out from this game, will Illawarra go 16-2 like Cairns did last season? My answer is no. They're not going to win 6 games this year. If they don't get an import tomorrow, I mean, they're going into round 6 now without an import. They can't. They're not going to steal a few games. They've got to steal 5 games the rest of the way to get near that number, and I don't think that's going to happen for this team, unfortunately. Let's jump on to what many people are calling the game of the round. Melbourne, 107, at home, defeated the Sydney Kings, 104. Lot to go through on this game. First and foremost, this has been lost in the ether a little bit, but Didi Luzada left injured. No update, but that's a big deal for them. They are banking on him to play big minutes. They now have 3 imports, Deshaun Taylor, who's a backup, but you know he was going to be their sort of third import, quote-unquote, behind Tate and Ware. So he's out. It puts a decent dent in their rotation, certainly in that 2-3 spot. Taylor helps, but Didi's obviously a lot bigger. Weaver thrown out at halftime. We all saw it. Coach loses cool after missed call. That's the headline here. It was entertaining, but anyone claiming that this is anything more than that is just concocting a story for dramatic effect. The NBL doesn't have a refereeing problem, a wider problem. It has inconsistencies, but that's not to say it has a problem. The only problem I could possibly think of is a referee perception. The whinging about refereeing in this country is just, I mean, it's blue ribbon. There's a lot of it. If you think the NBL is rigged or perhaps just poorly officiated, my advice to you is read Tim Donaghy's book, Out of Bounds, about the NBA umpiring controversy, or watch games in Europe, because otherwise you're looking at things in a vacuum. And vacuums are good for two things. They're great for cleaning carpets and for doing an Officer Dewey from Scary Movie 1. And my question to you is, if you think this weaver getting thrown out is more than that, which purpose do you use the vacuum for? Adam Ford did a good job taking up from Weaver. Lucas Walker seeing fourth quarter minutes. He played 8 minutes in total, or rounding up to 8 minutes. And Craig Moller playing over Sean Bruce late in the fourth quarter. Not all the way to the end of the fourth quarter, but late in the fourth quarter. Were interesting choices that perhaps coach Will Weaver wouldn't have made. Weaver said it post-game, missed free throws cost this team. 11 missed free throws. They make some of them, and half of them, and they've got the win. For me, Andrew Bogut wasn't aggressive enough in this game. 2 of 4 from the field, 0 free throw attempts. Looked to be moving gingerly. I think I put this out on Twitter. He's not moving as well as he'd perhaps like. He was great in the game before in this round, but this one, not quite with the same freedom of movement. And he was beaten into pivotal rebounding contests by Sean Long, dabbing at the ball, instead of jumping and grabbing it with two hands. And that's too bad. Melo Trimble was major clutch in this game. I thought he was brilliant. People have criticized his game this year. He had the ball on a string. His jump shot is just so technically, he's so strong with it. I really have a respect for his game. Keen little stat here. Melbourne are now 3-0 in games when they score over 100 points. I said it before, but Dean Vickerman, let your horses run. It's Melbourne Cup week. Let them go. Let the Clydesdale, let them get that little misty sweat on the fleece, on the coat. Let it go. My questions coming from this game. Injuries are creeping into the conversation with the Sydney Kings. Most obviously, Kevin Lish, Didi Luzada, and perhaps more subtly, Andrew Bogut, although he has admitted to missing practices with back spasms in the past, the tied together with duct tape comment. My question is, can this team get top spot, which it needs to win the title over the Wildcats and the United and Phoenix and Bullets? Can they get top spot if they suffer injuries / can't back up in the second games of a back-to-back? Not just in the season to get the number of wins they need to get the top spot, but also then when you go into the finals and you're basically playing a back-to-back type schedule. They're now 1-1 in the second game of a back-to-back. Small sample size, I'll agree. They play Perth at home on Sunday. That is a big second game of a back-to-back for them, because not only is it a second game of a back-to-back in a game, but it's also against a team that they need to win to, that counts for two for the Wildcats, if that makes sense, because they not only get the win, but they hand Sydney a loss. They have 6 back-to-backs this season, two games in one round, the Sydney Kings. They have 6 left. They're 1-1. I'm going to be monitoring how they go in those games, and let's see what happens. Or let's see if anyone else starts monitoring how they go in 2 games in one round. That's everything from those games. Trying to keep this thing pretty short. We're at 24 minutes already, so if you're walking down the street or shaving or whatever, it's hopefully a more pleasurable listen. Next segment I want to go to is NBL talking points, the biggest conversation starting topics from around the NBL. And I think this week you know what it is. It's Sean Long versus Andrew Bogut. Who's the best center in the NBL? Feels a bit hammy, but let's go in for it. I like this stuff. Sean Long, Melbourne are now 3 wins, 4 losses. He's averaging 23 points per game, 12 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 56% from the field, and 1.29 blocks. Andrew Bogut, Sydney are 6-1. He's averaging 10 points per game, less than half, 11 rebounds per game, 3.3 assists per game, 59% from the field, and 1.14 blocks per game. This is a really tough conversation. Now, what I'm about to say is not directed at Liam Santamaria, who's a very good writer and a very good thinker of the game, who put forward on that episode of Overtime a very articulate argument for his point of view. I'm talking about the people on the social medias who have their thoughts and like to leave things up in the air without any real proof about things. That's what I'm talking about here. Let's break this down into three things. For me, I want to talk about Corey Homicide Williams' comments on NBL Overtime. If you haven't watched that show, if you don't watch that show, you should start. It's fantastic. He basically said that people are afraid to say that Bogut's not the best center in the NBL because he'll send him a message and he's got the NBL media shook. I don't think many people would contend with that. I think that's pretty fair. I think, first of all, you class in the Australian love of the locals or the leniency towards locals, and then you added the fact that it's someone of Bogut's stature. That's quite natural. I don't think a lot of people would debate Williams on that. But also, let's think about who Corey Homicide Williams is and his comments and where they come from. He's a guy who played in the NBL for, I think, 5 or 6 years, played well, and after an MVP season was shafted by the Townsville Crocodiles in the same way that Sean Long is being shafted in this conversation of he versus Bogut. And it's the cerebral debate. The mindset of, we see what you're producing, but we think we can get a little bit better in an area of a game that we can't quite quantify with numbers, but it's just an intangible feeling thing. Corey Homicide Williams is an import in the NBL in one of its most difficult years, when you could only have two, I believe, and it was cutthroat. If you didn't produce, you were gone. And that has flowed into his thinking, and it's not a bad place to come from when you're talking about who's good and who's not. And my case in point is that Homicide Williams is still in and around the NBL. Both the Townsville Crocodiles and the Melbourne Tigers, who he played for, are not. When one man can last longer than entire clubs, and this goes for Mark Worthington as well, some of the teams he played on, that's something to be said. Going furthermore, Long versus Bogut, it's almost like jazz versus rock music. You know, Bogut is jazz, slower moving, smoother perhaps, more collaborative and subtle. Sean Long is rock and roll, overpowering, strong, in your face, aggressive and obvious. But the thing that bothers me the most in this debate is the pseudo-intellectualism of NBL fans. They won't entertain the thought that Sean Long even could, not is or would, but could be better. When people bring it up, they're dismissed as being immature or simple. The line, oh yeah, but the line of, oh yeah, Sean Long, yeah, okay, the dunks, you're going for the dunks and whatever. But, you know, I know the secret language of the basketball. I know, I see what you don't. I'm the jazz person who listens to jazz. I hear the music that's not in the music, the notes between the notes the musician isn't playing. It's just, it makes you sound great, and I'm sure it makes very interesting talk at parties, and I'm sure it makes you very attractive to women, or men if you're a woman. But it doesn't mean it doesn't make you a pretentious wanker. What, and it bugs me, because it would have been the same mindset that everybody in the MLB draft room of Billy Beane would have had. You know, oh, but look at the way the sound, it cracks off the bat, ugly girlfriend. You've seen the film, you all know what's going on. My advice to people is sort of just get your head out of a certain place on your body and listen to people, because they actually might say something kind of interesting that you should hear. Having said all that, I think Bogut's better. No, I'm kidding. Basketball's an athletic sport. And I'd rather have the guy who's in his prime, Long is 26, Bogut is 34, turning 35. I'd rather have that guy who's in his prime and young and athletic, who can get down on the ground for a loose ball or up off the floor for a rebound like we saw in the game. You know, don't overthink it. And don't take people's word for it. There is no secret language of basketball. Just watch the games and come to your own opinion. But that's me on Sean Long and Andrew Bogut. Both great players, but if I had to take one, it'd be really tough. But you know where I'd go. Let's have a look at the next round of games. We're heading into round 6. These odds are brought to you by Sportsbet. I normally go with TopSport, but they've only got the odds for the first two games out, so I've got to go with Sportsbet. First game of the round is New Zealand Breakers. $2.15 are hosting Melbourne, $1.71. I'm tipping Melbourne in that one. I just think they're the better team, and Casey Prather is back. Brisbane, next game. Brisbane, $2.14, host the Sydney Kings, $1.71. This is going to be a decent game. I've got an asterisk next to this one. I'm tipping the Sydney Kings. I think they're the better team. But, gee, it wouldn't surprise me if Brisbane beat them. It'd be very interesting to see how Sydney respond after a loss and travelling up to Brisbane. We shall see. But I just think Sydney are a better team. They play better defence and they can score better. And that's a good thing to do in basketball. Next game, South East Melbourne, $1.50. Play host to the New Zealand Breakers, $2.60. It's been an interesting game. Hopefully, Rice is coming to this game and will be there. I'm tipping South East Melbourne because I think they're a good team. But New Zealand could surprise you, but South East Melbourne fresh. New Zealand having travelled from home over to Melbourne. Not a huge distance, but nonetheless, South East Melbourne is my pick. Cairns, $1.36. Play host to the Illawarra Hawks, $3.19. Cairns Taipans are going to win this game. Next, Melbourne United, $1.29, play host to the Adelaide 36ers, $3.62. Adelaide, are less likely to win this game than Illawarra are over Cairns. I don't know if I agree with that. I would put Illawarra at damn near $5. This is another game I've got circled. I like the Adelaide 36ers. This is going to be a helter-skelter game. Both teams are going to score over 100, which works well for United. But I'm going with Melbourne. They're at home. They've come from New Zealand, which is not ideal. But Adelaide, I'm still got too many question marks about them to give them the nod. Next game. Sydney, $1.68. Perth Wildcats, $2.19. At Kudos Bank Arena in Summary Sydney. I'm picking the Perth Wildcats. They're fresh. They've got but one focus this round, and it's on the Sunday, so they've got a long time to prepare and think about it and travel and look after their bodies. So this is my one upset for the round, and I think the game of the round. So the last two are probably the best games of the round. Yeah. I don't think that the Kings are going to be able to do so well on back-to-backs. This is a back-to-back, and they're playing the Wildcats, and I think, depending on the outcome of the game before with Sydney, Perth have got the chance to steal top spot. And when Perth get a hold of something, whether it's a spot in the finals, which they've held for 35 years or whatever it is, or their fingers around the arms of the Championship Cup, Perth have a tendency to hang on to things. We shall see. Thank you, everyone, and goodbye. This is the end of this episode. Again, rate the show. You can give the show a star rating on Apple Podcasts. You can review it so you can actually write something like, I like the show, but the host isn't whatever. And you can also subscribe. So if you hit subscribe, it just means that the show automatically gets downloaded. If you hit subscribe, it's kind of like when U2 put out that album and didn't tell anyone and everyone just got it for free. That's kind of like what subscribing is. You can follow me on Twitter at MBLPocketPod. I'm pretty vocal on there. And on Instagram. I don't really put much up on there, but shucks, you can follow me nonetheless. Like the Facebook page and the YouTube channel. As always, I'm going to try and do more and more YouTube stuff. I'm actually hoping to do something based around NBL fantasy, but that's all in the future. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. Hope you had some pause for thought, and I will see you next week after the Rams games.